the public hearing on NFL 870. Senator Shields, we'll start with you.
I'm thinking about what rock causes. Oh, yeah, I'm thinking about the green
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Frank Shields. I represent District 9 in North and Southeast Portland. You have copies of my testimony. This legislation comes from the Training and Brain Research that Oregon's Child Everyone's Business campaign presented back in January. I went to that conference, was just amazed as I looked at some very compelling findings on the brain. To reiterate some of those, if you didn't get to that conference, a child is born with 100 billion brain cells. The connection of these cells occurs after birth, not before. These connections occur rapidly and are absolutely dependent on love, nurturing, and stimulation that the child receives. Simple fact is that a child which is loved and nurtured has a brain that is 30% larger than a child that is not. The other compelling findings stem from a new technology related to the brain. There's a thing called positron emission tomography. Sounds like Star Trek or something, but it's real. It shows how the brain uses energy. We can now see the difference between an active, stimulated infant's brain and a deprived infant's brain. Non-active parts of the brain look pale, while stimulated parts of the brain are colored in red. As I said in my testimony, those pictures, when I saw them, absolutely amazed me. But equal to my fascination was my frustration at that conference, as I recognized that we needed to be doing more to stimulate children's brains. Today, 59% of Oregon's mothers with children younger than 6 are in the workforce, almost 60%. Parents of 213,000 children in Oregon rely on child care services while they're at work. With so many children in child care, it is imperative that they are in quality environments. Senate Bill 870 directs the Department of Education to develop and implement statewide training for child care providers on healthy brain development. This bill will not guarantee quality environments. It simply increases the information available for child care providers to implement quality programs. It is my experience that most child care providers promote quality. They want to do what is best for the children entrusted to their care. But they need information. They need training. The Department of Education has the information. They've done a lot to keep up with the whole arena of brain development. It's time that they be linked, the Department of Education and those child care providers out there. The future of working children, I think, depends that we assure that they have loving, stimulating environments so that children can reach their full potential. Now, what happened to Senate Bill 870 is this. It would have died in committee since the original version called for an appropriation. In order to save the policy part of this bill, we've removed the fiscal impact, and we've linked it with what you'll hear about in a few moments from the folks from the University of Oregon. The bill is not everything that we strive for, but it will set in statute policy training that child care providers need on the importance of brain research, and it'll make that a priority. That maintains the integrity of the bill. I believe we get closer to what we sought in the original bill, and certainly what the University of Oregon wants to do with it is a very worthwhile cause as well. With that, I'll be available for questions as you continue your discussion with the folks in the university system.
Any questions for Senator?
Sure. Frank, I want to thank you and Senator Gordley for the work you've done. As you know, we spent a lot of time on this in the Senate Education Committee, and of course it's been on my mind from the day one and from when I went to the conference, but the thing that just really got my attention is the brain research that they're doing on Einstein's brain now, and you know, just what you said about the what happens when the child's brain after it's born. You know, would it be that we could do whatever was done to Albert Einstein? But, I mean, this is something we surely must do. It's a tough one to sell from the standpoint of the financial part of it because it's an investment, and, you know, you don't know for 10 years how that teenager or 15 years, but we certainly must do everything we can. Thank you for your work on this.
Thank you. As you mentioned, Senator, it is a tough sell when it comes to money, but you'll notice Section 2 is just allowing the Department of Ed to seek funds for this particular part of the program, and then you get down to Section 5 or 6 down there, and it talks about the funds for the university part, and they are linked together.
What do you expect the effect of this bill will be, given the fact that there are not funds appropriated? What is going to be the voluntary response to this with existing funds?
Well, I honestly believe that the Department of Education will seek the funds to try to implement the program. They're very much already invested in the program. I mean, they are a Department of Education, and this is brain research into the development of children's brains. It's what they want to do. I think they're already seeking to implement at least the idea or the will of this kind of bill. This certainly doesn't pay extra money, but they're going to be looking like everybody else is at their foundations and possibilities of grants to do what they can. And also they can, through the already existent means of communication that they have, probably get some word out to a lot of daycare providers and so on about what's happening in that field of research.
Any other questions?
I'm sure.
Senator,
do you know of any grants that are available trying to get it going?
I haven't been in conversation recently with the Department of Education on this particular concept. I am somewhat familiar with a lot of different foundations, and am aware that a lot of them are very interested in this arena.
Does the university itself have opportunity to have grants? I think
I'm going to have to let the university speak to their part of this bill.
Senator Burke?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. In answer to Senator Crowe's question about possible funding from foundations, I think that's what I heard you inquiring about. I think a good place for Oregon to start would be with the Danforth Foundation, which is where, which is an organization that has sponsored national conferences focused on brain research. And a number of Oregon legislators, a bipartisan group of legislators, have attended the Danforth conferences over the past 2 years with legislators from 14 or 15 other states. And the policy direction that we're trying to move in now is an important step. The funding question aside, the policy direction is just critical. This is something we must do, in my belief. And then I think we can go back to Danforth and say, this is what we achieved this session. Help us. You know, help us with the funding part of it. Again, they are foundations. There are dollars there. We may be able, Oregon may be able to make a case for some funding, if not from Danforth, from some other entity. But we need to take this step, the policy step.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I wanted to ask you about this program. Reading the staff measure summary, it talks about the provider training program, including the identification of risk factors, and that goes on to say appropriate referrals for a child who is at risk of taking part in the criminal justice system. And I'm wondering what age group that this bill would refer to, and are they really going to be making assessments? Now, I assume that because this is child care, we're talking about very young children. And I was just wondering about the kind of assessment that would take place that would allow a provider to determine that a very young child might ultimately become part of the criminal justice system. Could you explain that to me just a bit?
I do want to defer somewhat to the Education Committee on the Senate side. Of course, Senator Hartman is here and Senator Gordley, and as they said, they spent a good bit of time on this bill. I do want to thank Senator Gordley for the work that she did in co-sponsoring this bill with me. As I recall, the conference itself spent more time in discussing the whole issue of how those brain cells connect at incredibly rapid rates. They gave an example which may not seem relevant to you right now, but they gave us one example of in testing they covered the eye of a kitten for just the first week or so of life. And after that, because the brain cells were geared to deal with the issue of sight during that week or two-week period, and all the connections were made, all the synapses were made, when there was no stimulus there, those brain cells and those synapses went on to do other things, and the kitten was actually blind in that eye. Okay? That's how rapidly this development occurs. Now, if I can relate this to issues of later on, what we do know from our research is that, for instance, a child that is allowed to go through Head Start is one-third, statistically, one-third as likely to end up in the criminal justice system after high school as a child from a very, very similar background that's not given the opportunity to go through Head Start. And we know the savings that are related in that kind of an arena. So while I'm not an expert on every aspect of this education, I do know some of the research that's going on. And again, I'd be glad to defer to Senator Hartsunger, his committee, for a more detailed answer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon?
The bill is focused at it's focused at the first 3 years of life and the stimulation, early stimulation that needs to take place during that time. And again, the focus of that is on child care providers, those who are providing care to that age group. And in our state, we have 10,000 registered family child care providers and 4,500 child care workers. As Senator Shields and I were talking about this bill and developing a context for the bill, we want to get information to those providers, to those child care workers, about the brain research findings and how critical it is to ensure that there are stimulating activities provided in those child care settings for that age group, that 1 to 3 year age group. So again, that's the focus. And that's the critical policy element that we're talking about.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Senator Shields, are you aware of any connection between this work and the Healthy Start folks who really are out providing advocacy to families? Because all over the state, we have Healthy Start programs that work with families who are having a tough time with their infants and toddlers.
I am not aware of the details of how those connections might occur. It's obvious they should occur.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping they're kind of listening in and saying you're right.
Well, I think that's an opportunity we have because we do have an expansion of the Healthy Start program, and it is with the same age group and with the population that may be having difficulty providing the attention and care and stimulation that these children need. And so I think that's an opportunity for us to provide this material.
I think it's certainly
on children and families.
Thank you. I think it's certainly an opportunity. Again, I'd underscore that we're trying to get information into the hands of thousands of daycare providers so that they recognize such simple things that everybody should know now, that child care isn't a matter of plunking a kid down in front of a television set. In fact, it has an exact opposite effect on a child because a television, which is not an interactive human kind of contact, actually stimulates a totally different part of the brain. And you have that child sitting there, and the part of the brain that you want stimulated and the synapses you want being built are not occurring because the child is sitting there and a different part of the brain is being developed than the cognitive part that we want developed. So We need to get that information to daycare providers about how they really need to go about helping young children build those brain cells.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
I'm going to call it Tom Dyke, Chris Bailey, and Mason Cavalla all at the same time.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Kirk Bailey with the University of Oregon. It's a pleasure to be here today. I have to tell you that we have been working on this bill for quite a few weeks, and certainly the Senate Education Committee for much longer than we have at the University of Oregon. But in our investigations, we have found the only bill relating to brain or brain research or the cognitive functions that are associated with the brain, and the important work that needs to be done in that particular area. So this really is something of a watershed day for us, and I think for the Oregon legislature as well, because we begin to step down a road to explore and develop programs for a frontier that we know very little about right now, but certainly are on the threshold of learning much about. As you know, this bill creates a training program, a child care provider training program, and also establishes a Center for Brain Biology and Machine at the University of Oregon. The amendments that you have in front of you will bring together our best efforts in the education sector as well as our scientific efforts, and it's that reason that we were pushing the amendments for this particular bill. When we discovered that you had seen information from the program that Senator Shields mentioned, we were very excited about an opportunity to testify to you, both President Plonemeyer and the university as a whole, that this bill needs to be supported, and we hope that you will take some action on it. If you can't support it with appropriation, at least authorize the programs to go forward and to seek grant or gift funding for their operations. This really is exciting legislation, and I have to thank Senator Shields and Senator Gordley for their graciousness in allowing us the opportunity to work on some amendments for this legislation. So I will turn things over to our Vice Provost for Research, Mr. Tom Dyke, to explain the details of the center and urge your support. Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name for the record is Tom Dyke, Vice Provost for Research and Professor of Chemistry at the University of Oregon. It's a real pleasure to be able to talk with you today about work going on at the University of Oregon in the area of our research initiative, Brain Biology and Machine. The idea behind this initiative is actually relatively straightforward. We're interested in the fantastic developments in information science and information technology and how that plays out in scientific disciplines, particularly in cognitive neuroscience and brain research, but also material science, optical science, and computational science, and the use of digital techniques and the internet in analyzing the data coming out of these disciplines and disseminating it nationally throughout the scientific community. So the heart of the idea is an interdisciplinary initiative organized around modern digital technology. We really want to use information science to further this work. Now, as I said, this involves scientists, currently 10 of our leading scientists, but eventually will involve as many as 60 professors and perhaps 300 research personnel in the various areas of the initiative. And to give you an idea of how this would work, one of the primary targets for the initiative is cognitive neuroscience and the structure of the brain. And the idea behind this part of the effort is to understand how does the brain organize information, how are the physical structures in the brain set up to process information, how does the human genome lead to the development of these structures within the brain, and how over evolutionary time was the information driving this development encoded in the genome leading to the development of the structure of an organism and particularly the structure of the brain. Now, Senator Shields mentioned the work on positron emission tomography. These techniques were actually pioneered by Professor Michael Posner at the University of Oregon. The idea is to use physical techniques to stimulate a person to measure the response in the brain and to see physically where cognitive processes are located or how the brain lights up in response to a particular stimulus. More recently, Professor Helen Neville and coworkers have been using functional magnetic resonance imaging techniques to do the same type of analysis, particularly on early childhood language development. And so the idea, again, is using techniques that are very similar to the imaging technology that doctors use to investigate damaged knees and other parts of the body. The same technology can be used to understand how the brain is organized in language development and knowledge acquisition for children at early ages. And one of the really exciting discoveries in that work is that Helen Neville and her coworkers can see how the brain is physically organized to acquire language development, and it's very clear that those structures are fully developed at an early state in a child's development. Perhaps by age 5 and 6, the structures are already well developed. By the early teenage years, those structures are completely developed and set up in the brain. And one can see this in terms of the physical evidence coming out of the magnetic resonance imaging. And the implications for early childhood training and education coming out of this work, I think, are rather profound and very exciting. A similar effort uses electrophysiological techniques, similar to an electroencephalogram, in which brain waves are detected. Professor Don Tucker at the University of Oregon is working on techniques to analyze these brain waves in real time with a similar goal of the magnetic resonance imaging, but also with the possibility of allowing feedback techniques to be developed, which would be very helpful in treating children or adults with neurological diseases or neurological disabilities. So again, I think there are some very profound implications of this basic research for the treatment and development of children and adults. We are seeking both foundation and federal grant funding for those efforts. Another effort is in the evolution of biological development. I mentioned how does the human genome have encoded within it the information that leads to this development. It's clearly genetically driven. And how did that evolve over biological time? And we've just recently received a $3 million training grant from the National Science Foundation to further the education of students in this area of evolution of development as part of our Brain Biology Machine Initiative. Another area that is related to this is, what is the analogy to artificial machines of the way brains process information? Can we understand the brain through our understanding of artificial computers? Can we develop novel new computers based on our understanding of the human brain? We've quite recently received a grant from the Army Research Office and the National Science Foundation to Professor Raymer in our physics department to develop novel optical quantum computing devices. And this is a combination of optical physics and quantum physics, which uses light rather than electrons as the basis of new computers. And we feel that down the road, the development of these quantum computing devices could lead to new concepts and new computers, new hardware, which could be thousands of times faster than current state-of-the-art computers developed using electrons as the carrier of information. Instead, this effort would use light and some of the novel properties of quantum physics to carry out those developments. In addition, a very important part of this is bioinformatics. These efforts generate huge amounts of data. The magnetic resonance imaging involves very, very large databases. The genomic analysis has huge amounts of genetic information. How do we compare the human data with model organisms such as zebrafish, which is another area that the University of Oregon has been very active in? We need to develop dissemination techniques so that this information can be organized and so that it can be disseminated rapidly to the international and national scientific community through the use of the Internet. So these are the areas of the initiative. It's, I think, a new and exciting interdisciplinary initiative. The benefits specifically to Oregonians, I believe, are, first of all, biomedical research and educational technology leading to the improvement of lives of our children and adults. It will lead to state-of-the-art research facilities for Oregon students. It will help the state of Oregon develop advanced network facilities through Oregon's participation in the Internet too, and some of the spinoff projects like the Abilene Project. It will allow us to be a leader in startup companies for new technologies in the areas of biotechnology, material science, and computer science. I'm very pleased that this bill has been brought for you, brought in front of you. It will be very helpful in our efforts to secure additional private foundation and federal funding for this project. We have the center status for this initiative. It's already, the fact that this initiative is in place has already helped us to obtain nearly over $4 million in federal grants that I alluded to earlier. The focus on additional institutional support through the center, I think, will be extremely helpful in furthering our attempts to bring in additional resources for this effort. Thank you.
Madam Chair. The addition is being described as nicely described in this document, and I don't know that every member of the committee has received this. Mr. Bailey, you can comment.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I believe that every member of the committee has, but if not, we do have extra copies, and we'll make sure that you have somebody in the chair.
I just want to make sure that we all have the document that clearly defines what's being described on the record. Thank you.
This is, you know, clearly very exciting information, and your work is very stimulating to all of us. The bill is about getting this information to the people who can actually influence the brains of these old tads that are populating our daycare centers. Are there materials available that really are appropriate for daycare staff that are not so complex that they can make the jump from your really new and exciting information to actually doing things with infants?
Representative Ross and committee members, I think that, you know, it's clear that the initiative is an initiative in basic research, but the pace of this research, I think, is extremely rapid, particularly in the area of brain development and its relation to childhood development. And so this research, these findings are widely disseminated throughout the scientific community. And I believe that within the next few years, therapies and educational techniques based on this research will be available to help us in the process of enriching and developing the development of children. So I think an honest answer is that the materials coming out of our initiative are not yet in the hands of people who would be able to apply them in a beneficial way to children, but we have a very strong and powerful school of education in terms of research, whose focus is more in application and outreach. And I expect them to become a part of our initiative as the basic research becomes more advanced. And I see a very clear pathway for that information to be disseminated through their efforts into direct application and outreach into the type of folks that you're talking about. One could foresee that occurring within a time span easily of 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, however, there are materials that are available now, as I understand it, through the Commission on Children and in a partnership with the Oregon Employment Department. The Oregon Employment Department has oversight over the registered family child care provider. And as I recall, we heard testimony in our Senate Education Committee that, you know, these folks are ready to hit the ground running. And we were here, you know, the bill before you is requesting dollars to help that effort. But at the same time, we recognize the reality of the funding picture. And so, you know, we're shifting and we're talking about this initiative that is also underway at U of O. So we don't need to wait 5 years to get started. We can start right now if we chose to do that from a fiscal standpoint. But there is a nice segue to the work that's going on at U at U of O. I hope that's there.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross and Senator Gordley, Kirk Bailey once again from the University of Oregon. One very practical example of this, I might add, that both of these programs involve the University of Oregon in that our Institute on Violence and Destructive Behavior is advising the Child Care Provider Training Program. They have developed assessment materials and educational training materials for primary schools, and those can readily be adapted, I believe, to earlier intervention type of environments. They are working on materials that relate to the question that Representative Wilson asked earlier about the kind of assessment that needs to be done. And what they will do is take the basic research that's done in our science and psychology areas and integrate that into their educational tools and materials.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Lisa Zavala, representing the Chancellor's Office, Oregon University System. Just here today, just to lend my support or the Chancellor's Office support of this program, the AA8 amendment. We feel that putting this into the statutory language will give us a good kick start and help the university seek federal funding for this priority project. Thank you.
Lisa, does the system anticipate that in subsequent sessions of the legislature, you'll be back for a general fund appropriation for this research program?
Madam Chair, it's fair to know at this point we don't anticipate that. There's no language in the amendments that would set that up for the future.
Ask the gentleman at the University of Oregon, is this something that can be developed within the resources of the university and the grants you might obtain, or is it something that will need a general fund of boost?
Well, our current strategy is to seek funding primarily through foundation and federal sources. It's conceivable that we might ask for funding through the regular OUS process in the way that other areas of science and technology and education are done. We wouldn't be back with a specific request outside that regular process.
I think as I read the material, you anticipate some sort of facility being built at some point for this?
This is an interdisciplinary effort, and we found from our long experience with this kind of work that getting people geographically close together is extremely important in developing the kind of interactions that make it a positive effort. We would hope to be able to locate funding to build a building in which we could physically locate the scientists working on this project. The initiative will happen.
Is that funding come through state bonding? Is that the way you do it, or general fund appropriation or something?
That would be a useful way to do that, we're looking at a variety of possible sources.
When is that on the timeline? When do you want the facility?
Well, ideally, within the next 2 to 4 years.
I'm not objecting to it. It sounds like a good program. I just want to see it laid out. Is this research going on other places now?
Well, certainly the various areas that I've mentioned involve research, which is occurring on a national scale. I mean, our scientists are part of that, in fact, leaders in that national discussion. What makes this a unique initiative is the fact that we've organized this work around the idea of information science and information technology, because it's clear to us that that is, in fact, one of the leading components of successful and pioneering new science. And so I think that organizing this initiative around that theme is unique around the country. I don't know of anyone else that is doing that. And we're convinced that we'll be able to maintain our leadership in the specific areas of science that I've been talking about because of that unique understanding of the role of information science cutting across a number of disciplines that actually seem to be quite disparate.
I know the university has taken a lead in gene research, and we're all proud of what you've done, and I think that's remarkable. Within the system, is there other research going on that can be coordinated at other institutions to help with this project?
Yes, Senator Charlin, committee members, we've certainly been talking with folks at the other institutions around the state. We've had discussions with OHSU. Constantly in contact with people in the engineering community at OSU and TSU through the Engineering and Technology Industry Council. So we are discussing with people how our initiative would overlap and strengthen other efforts in the state, and we're also aware of what's going on in other areas so that we're not duplicating work that is also being carried out at the other institutions within the state. So the current state of things is that we're talking with folks and trying to see how this initiative would fit into the statewide picture, and we're pretty convinced that there will be some very strong interactions as the initiative evolves.
Now, are you getting good reception from the people you're talking to about the project?
Yeah, I think everyone is quite excited about it, and perhaps just a slight bit envious, but I think it's going well.
Thank you. We've got one more bill over there.
Thank you. Was there any discussion, I apologize for missing earlier this morning's introduction of this bill, but I mean, one thing that's caught my eye, was focused only on child care providers, and yet really brain development should be, this information should be put in the public eye. Is there any plan to try to provide this to the general public as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I mentioned our Institute on Violence and Destructive Behavior earlier. They will certainly be working as much as they can to integrate any of the research into their programs within primary and secondary schools throughout Oregon. I know that they have some level of public outreach beyond that, and I know that the other departments that are listed in the bill do the same, but I cannot tell you that there's a general plan for public dissemination of this information. I think you see the results of this kind of brain research and the practical implications in the medical fields and education fields as you know, if you go to a hospital, they're using new machinery, new science, or new techniques. Same thing in schools, they're integrating it into their education structures. But if you're talking about a general public dissemination of this information, I'm not aware of anything to that effect.
Thank you. I guess my point being that clearly not everybody's in child care or has child care, hence these same factors are critical to children who are not. Whether you work with the medical community, who obviously pediatrics, pediatricians could help disseminate this. I'm just trying to figure out other ways that you could try to get the general public, parents who don't have child care, who don't need child care, to help be knowledgeable on these basic things that you're doing.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, and members of the committee, I'd like to follow up with that a little bit. All of the scientists involved in our initiative are actually, I think, leaders in national research, and they will ensure that the research and the applications are disseminated nationally throughout the research community. So that is certainly the primary way in which this research will be disseminated. However, we also see how the research can lead rather directly to applications and to outreach. For example, Professor Tucker, that I talked about earlier, actually is running a startup company in which the techniques, the electrophysiological techniques that he has helped develop, are leading to practical applications and products that can be of use in the wider community. So I think people are aware of the responsibility to see that the basic research is translated into application and outreach, and we'll be doing everything in our power to see that that information is disseminated and does get into the hands of people who need that research.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 870, open work session. Mr. Gendron?
Madam Chair, members, you have distributed to you this morning a set of amendments, the Senate Bill 870-A8 amendments. And the testimony that you've been hearing this morning actually refers to the bill as it would be if you adopted these amendments and not to the AIM growth bill. The AIM growth bill does contain general fund appropriations, which the co-chairs have requested that you not move forward because of a lack of funds available. But the bill as amended would establish the two programs that were discussed and would allow both programs to function or to receive other public and private funds to operate. There's only one thing that I would like to mention, lest there are any questions, that I think was not entirely clear from the presentation, and that is the second of the two programs, the one that the A8 amendments are adding, University of Oregon Center for Brain Biology and Machines, it is not strictly necessary to pass the statute to allow this center to be established. Existing laws, it grants the Department of Higher Education authority to do this already, but the university is requesting that this be placed in statute as to assist it in obtaining federal grants. That they believe that if it is in statute, it will help them obtain outside grants. Otherwise, if there aren't any questions.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I had a question.
Okay. Senator Brock?
See, from your point of view, is there any negative fiscal or other impact of passing this? I understand the benefits and support those. Do you see any negatives we should be aware of?
I do not, except you should note that by placing this particular center in statute, the University of Oregon would have to come back to the legislature if, for whatever reason in the future, they would wish to disband the operation.
Senator Carter, are you ready?
Yes. And, Steve, my brain is a little fuzzy this morning, so we're moving the Dash 8 amendment. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 870.
Senator Gardner, move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 8, AIM Growth Senate Bill 870. Any questions? Any objections? Motion carries. Senator Gardner?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 870 as amended to the full ways and means committee.
Any discussion? Representative
Beck. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really pleased that we have this initiative. I recall back at the very beginning of the session, before our afternoon Civil Judiciary Committees met, I went to several, I'd call them seminars on brain development, and I was a very good student that time. I took very good notes. I read those notes over a couple times, and so I'm quite excited to hear about this initiative, and I certainly support it.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I think this is absolutely wonderful, and I'm happy to be agreeing with my Republican colleagues.
Any other discussion? Any objections to this? Seeing none? Motion carries. House Bill 8, Senate Bill 870, Anne Gross. Representative Ross, can I share this to the poll and on the floor?
Absolutely.
And
lovely.
Senator Hurston? Senator Gordon, would you like to carry on those?
I'd love to.
Okay. 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 Open the public hearing on House Bill 2993. We're going to start with
Jim Beyer and Dave Nichols. Good morning. For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Beyer, Grant Program Director with the Oregon State Scholarship Commission. We have reviewed the amendments that are being proposed to Ian Gross, House Bill 2993. Would like to point out to the committee that as revised, these amendments would delete the proposed state-funded work-study program and would delete any changes that were proposed to the Volunteers in Service to Oregon or VISTO program. In addition, what remains is the addition of two new programs, the Oregon Achievement Grant Program and the Oregon Progress Grant. And in addition, it also changes the name from the Oregon Need Grant Program to the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program. The revised bill, however, provides no funding for these new programs, and one of the things that the Commission would like to be assured of is that these programs would only become operational at the point that specific funding is provided for them. We would like to avoid being in a position in the future, in a biennium from now, having to take funds from what we consider to be an underfunded need grant program in order to fund these new initiatives.
Madam Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is David Mesereau. I'm one of the seven commissioners on the Scholarship Commission from Portland, ably represented here by Senator Abel Gordley and Representative Joanne Bowman. You have a copy of the prepared testimony that I wrote before I got here today. That's the only way you can make copies. I'd leave those in your hands, but I would want to reflect on the way I've understood change comes about. You either start and then begin to plan, or you plan and then you start. Now, 35 years in the public school system, I have innumerable invisible scars at this point that says you're far better off if you plan and then start. The complex reorganization of financial aid for students seeking post-secondary education that was originally proposed in House Bill 2993 were very exciting. And I thought an extraordinary opportunity to put together a thoroughly comprehensive plan for this outstanding need on the part of providing financial support to people seeking post-secondary education. That's the central responsibility of the Scholarship Commission, to be sure that we seek every means possible to aid students and their family in seeking post-secondary education. What's offered now is, and causes some reluctance on my part, is that various pieces have changed their size and shape. And once again, we're asked to think about taking a trip with the question of the adequacy of the resources being available as we go down the road. It's still a question. Now, I know that from the agency staff, there's some reasonable confidence that the set of amendments that have been now proposed and included in the consideration would get us to where we want to go. I have to admit, once again, I'm a lay commissioner. I'm a novice at these proceedings. And that's despite having taught history and politics and government for 35 years. I've been educated, instructed, and well-informed by my experiences here this session of the legislature. I would only wish I could take all that I've learned back to those 35 years. I would want to encourage every step possible for collaboration across all the segments that are represented in the quest for financial aid for students seeking post-secondary education. In my mind, that's not something that has been a characteristic feature of the process that's led to the material that's in front of you at this point. I would encourage, however this comes out, that whatever steps can be taken to facilitate that constructive collaboration across the three segments be a key feature of any development we take from this point forward. Thank you.
I was caught by the statement to think that there ought to be planned initially before we make a move, if we make a move. I've generally been a fan of the NEED grant. I've always felt we've underfunded it and we needed more money in it, but it seems to me like that getting help to students based on need is very, very essential, very important. And I'm not so sure that the other things are as important for the general student in Oregon as getting help there. So I don't know whether it's necessary to change this program and have four grant programs where we had one or two grant programs where we had one or not. It seems to me like that there ought to be, rather than a bill, some kind of process in which we, the scholarship commission, explores that with the institutions, both the private and the public and the community colleges, sit down and see what do we need other than the NEED grant, if anything, or is the NEED grant, do we need to change it to opportunity grant or whatever else? But it seems to me like that there ought to be some discussion and planning and process before we start this program.
Thank you very much. Because I guess I got to start because you want to go
ahead
and explain
what. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2993 is a bill that establishes new student aid programs and also makes some changes in the way that the state's current NEED grant program operates. This is another bill where you are being asked to consider it not as it comes to you, but with amendments. In this case, the A9 amendment with a couple of additions that didn't get into the A9. We've distributed a one-page sheet that describes what House Bill 2993 would do. Let me focus on what it would do with the A9 amendment. The primary effect of the amendments themselves are to eliminate fiscal impacts to the bill this biennium due to funding availability, and also to delay NEED grant changes also until the next biennium, so as not to conflict with the work you just did on the State Scholarship Commission budget and the budget notes you approved for this biennium. What the bill would do with the A9 amendment is, first of all, relating to the NEED grant, it changes the name of the grant program to the Oregon Opportunity Grant. It allows the grant to be offered for students during summer sessions. Currently, that's not available. And it will require the Scholarship Commission to consult annually with representatives of educational sectors to determine grant-level awards. And also, I believe the understanding is, and I would ask for future, for perhaps some response from people as they come up to testify, is I believe that the that this would result in a process that would result in a single formula for the distribution of the NEED grant, as opposed to the separate segregation of funds for independent colleges that we do now. All of these changes, again, would be delayed until the 2001, the next biennium.
Madam Chair, the source of the amendments, these amendments are coming from?
These amendments, well, the source of the amendments are the request of the co-chairs to remove the specific fiscal impact. The language relating to the NEED grant and changes and the process of establishing the process of determining the NEED grant levels is essentially as it came, comes to this committee from the Senate Education, from the House Education Committee, with some technical amendments, because when that was in gross, there were certain parts of it that didn't come through as the discussions before the House Education Committee would have led people to believe. So there were some clarifications there, but basically this is the process for the NEED grant that the House Education Committee approved, with the change that it's delayed. The changes are delayed and one by any.
By changing the name of the NEED grant to the Opportunity Grant, do we change the way the grant is available? Does this change who qualifies to get their grant? What other than a change in name is implied in it?
The grant will remain a grant that is based on financial needs. It will not be transferred or transformed into a grant that is based on some other requirements, such as a merit requirement. However, the process for determining the grant awards would be annually involved consultation with the educational sector that are involved.
Does that mean that they can set the requirements each year? Or
That's correct. And actually, under existing statute, the Scholarship Commission can set the requirements for the existing NEED grant every year. Some of the requirements that you may recall, that the income requirements to get a NEED grant, where students' income has to be less than a certain proportion of the median income in the state, all of those are established by rule currently at the Scholarship Commission and could be changed without legislation to affect them.
Okay. Does the Scholarship Commission still have final authority in that, or is this into the conference of representatives from the institutions?
I would refer you to the bill language. We have prepared a hand-engrossed version of what the bill would look like with the amendment. And if you turn to page 5 of the bill, line 27, this talks about how the NEED grant would be established. And the language that these amendments would approve would say on line 27 that eligibility, financial need, and the amount of the Oregon Opportunity Grant shall be determined annually by the State Scholarship Commission in consultation with representatives from the educational sector. So this still has the authority to grant, to determine the award amounts remains with the commission, though they are required to consult with the representatives, and the educational sectors, by the way, would refer to those sectors that receive those grants, those being community colleges, public four-year institutions, and private four-year.
Is the consultation requirement something that's new? Has it been there before? I think they
already
have consulted.
This would be a new requirement.
So, Steve,
yeah.
in terms of establishing new programs, this although it has fiscal impact this biennium, what are the new programs in this Ain Growth copy are still here?
The new and growth, the new programs that are still there are, first of all, the Oregon Achievement Grant Program.
Yeah, so is this very explicit? It's on your page?
This would be the second bullet item.
Okay.
The original bill, or the bill as it comes to you, would establish an achievement grant program, which would be a $15,000 for $1,500 per year merit-based award. It would be available to undergraduate students who achieve a SIM or who achieve a minimum score that would be set by the commission on a national test, college test like the SAT. It would be available for all 4 years. To continue to receive it after the first year, students would have to maintain satisfactory progress toward a degree, and they would have to be attending college in Oregon. The way that the amendments would change this is the only change, well, there are two changes. First of all, it eliminates the $1,500 figure and is silent as to the size of the award. And secondly, it delays the award until the 2001-2003 biennium. Thus, the next legislative assembly, when they make determinations as to whether or how much to fund the award, could, by that decision, indirectly pick the size and amount of the award.
By establishing two new grant categories for the next legislative session, then does the scholarship commission have the authority to decide how much money goes into the Oregon Achievement Award, the Oregon Progress Grant, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant? Is that distribution between these three categories up to the commission?
I would believe that that would not be the case, since the budget for all of these categories would come to the Legislative Assembly in the form of the State Scholarship Commission budget, and you would approve, or the next Legislative Assembly would approve a budget that is based on certain dollar amounts for each of these programs. So that would be something that would be defined, and expectations would be there when the legislature next time approves the budget for the scholarship. Just as now, there's an expectation of how much money is in there for the need grants.
So we have no idea about what the... If we're putting this down here, then we are providing an expectation that something will happen next session. If we don't think something's going to happen, we shouldn't put it in here. If we do think something's going to happen, do we have any idea of the price? In other words, if we're creating an expectation, what is the price tag for the next biennium that goes with that expectation?
One thing that the bill does require is it will require the Scholarship Commission to come up with a proposal for implementing their needs for the new achievement grant program before the next legislative session. That's the only part of the bill that actually becomes effective right away, that requirement for them to do this report for the next session.
So, excuse me, let me just understand what you just said. So the commission has come up with a proposal for the legislature on how much they want, what's the appropriate level of funding, or
how the program should be structured and what the cost would be. That would be the new Section 5 in the language.
But at this point, we don't have any idea what that would be.
There was, in the original proposal that was put together by the, originally by the Oregon Independent College Association for this program, they did have a cost in mind, and to be totally honest, I forget that number right now, but Mr. Angene may be able to help you with that.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Steve, question for you then, just to help me clarify this. What we have formerly known as the NEED grant will have its full funding apportioned among these three programs now created, the Achievement Grant, the Progress Grant, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which is the renamed NEED grant, as I understand.
The legislature would be able, or would provide funding for all three of the programs, and that would be the process that would be the next legislative session would have to undergo. There's no strict requirement
that these programs, any of the, either of the new programs or the existing need grants, be given any money at all. I mean, if the legislature next session decides not to fund these programs, that will be an option available to them. But these will be, my understanding is that this, with these amendments, this is designed to create a merit-based award program and an additional program to provide incentives for community college students to go on to a four-year institution to receive their baccalaureate. The second program, which we really haven't talked about yet, is the Oregon Progress Grant. These would be incentives, and clearly the Scholarship Commission would be expected to make a proposal to fund both of these programs that would then come through the normal budgetary.
About my follow-up, let me sharpen my pencil in. I've been concerned about the NEED grant and its funding level, and I like the concept of what the NEED grant has done. So my question would be, is, say in a perfect world where the NEED grant continues to be funded at an increasing level, is that funding going to be, in all likelihood, jeopardized by the creation of these additional grants?
I cannot answer that. It is possible that the next legislative assembly might, you know, might develop a certain amount of dollars or number of dollars that it believes it can afford for student financial aid. And indeed, the process might end up being that they choose to devote some of them to the merit program, thereby leaving less to the need grant program. This, I think, is something that cannot be predicted at this point.
Steve, looking at the new Section 5, which reads prior to the convening of the 71st Legislative Assembly, the State Scholarship Commission shall prepare and deliver a report proposing to the Legislative Assembly and the Governor specifications for implementing the Oregon Achievement Grant Program. What that doesn't say, for me, is that there will, that there would be consultation with the appropriate educational sector, meaning higher ed, community colleges, independent. That explicit language isn't there. My other comment or question is, and I'm sure we'll get this in testimony from Jerry Kissler when he comes up, there's a recommendation that a blue ribbon commission be formed to address a couple of questions. What should Oregon's policy be towards the balance between institutional and student support, and within the category of student support, what should be the balance between need-based and merit-based support? Help me. Are we talking about the same, are we talking about two separate reports and committees here, or is this one and the same? You follow me?
Senator, I'm not aware of the Blue Ribbon Commission that you're referring to, and I don't believe that that is established in this bill.
Okay.
It sounds like that's a proposal for some other process that's beyond the scope of what is in this.
Okay. I'll wait to hear the testimony.
I was just going to say, it would seem to me, as I read the qualifications for the achievement grant, that it would basically be any student who's there would qualify for the achievement grant. If we do what we thought we would do with the STEM, and that is get everybody through the STEM by the 10th grade, really, which is the goal for the STEM. We're not there yet, and some students aren't getting through the STEM process. But it was, as it was designed, as I remember it, having served on the committees that worked on this, was that everybody was supposed to make it. And so if the achievement grant is based on that, it means then that a merit grant basically is going to about anybody who graduates from the school in Oregon. I don't object to that, but we have an opportunity grant that's need-based, and then we have an achievement grant that's really open to almost everybody. And there's not enough money to go around now, and it seems to me that it still makes sense to concentrate on need rather than opportunity.
I'm not that familiar with the percentage of students that are expected to actually be successful in achieving their STEM, at least over the near term period. But my understanding was that actual current estimates were that less than half students would be successful.
Right now, that's true. But the goal is to get them all through, and that's why we're going to do the assessment centers or some such variation, is that we want everybody to have that STEM.
Okay,
Thank you, Chair. In response to Senator Crow's questions, I think at least the quality education model talked about 90% someday being the expectation. Maybe we could achieve that or maybe not. The other thing I wanted to mention was relating this then to the Education Reform Act. I think one of the best motivators to get students and parents certainly to really work at passing the STEM would be something like this. And the amount of money, the amount of the scholarship or the grant is not fixed in stone, I would think, at $1,500. But the concept or the idea, the fact of the motivational opportunities, I think are pretty significant. So I like the idea of rewarding students who have accomplished the STEM. I think this is a good way to do it. Except for Chair Minnis, the school district right now, which is Reynolds. Reynolds is the only district in Oregon that requires a STEM for graduation. So for a lot of kids, the STEM really doesn't mean very much. Well, I think we should make the STEM meaningful, and I think this would accomplish that.
Well, if we're going to have a merit grant, we want to make it meaningful.
Yes. Yes.
And define merit.
Would you mind deferring to Representative Ralph?
I think we ought to call. I would if she didn't have to leave.
I'm not going to say about this is that we all want students to succeed. We would like to support all students. This bill is going to do one of two things. It's going to create more expectation and more funds and be roll up costs in the new biennium, or it is going to have the result that Representative Wilson pointed out, there will be less money for need grant. You can't have it. You know, it's one or the other. It's more roll-up costs, a created expectation that we will spend more in the new biennium. And those of you who hate growing government and more expenditures should be very cautious of this bill. On the other hand, those of you who hate poor people and want to have more money for the middle class, this is great. With that, I would
like to thank you. I'm sorry. That's good.
Did you ever think you'd say that?
No, I
didn't know. She makes it sound reasonable, doesn't
it?
You're on the roll.
Representative Wilson, would you like to come and get the testimony on this student plan?
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for the opportunity this morning. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm the state representative in District 29. And I haven't heard, caught a little bit, it's on a tube, but I haven't heard everything. So you just may want to ask me questions. But, you know, my goal with this bill and Senator Gordley is, aren't you a co-sponsor? There you are. Yes, you are. Senator Gordley, you're a co-sponsor on this bill. Our goal with this bill was argue that Oregon has not done enough for students in the area of need grants, nor has Oregon done enough for students, I think, to award achievement. And another thing that I like very well is the concept of the progress grants. I think that that's an opportunity for our young people to perhaps start in a community college setting. And then be able to go on to a four-year institution. And I've heard a lot of debate about what would happen with the funding next session. Of course, that will be up to the next legislature. But my hope would be that we would retain the funding that we have for the need grant or the opportunity grant, if it's renamed, that we would retain that and grow that. I believe this time around we're going to be serving about 98% of the students that are eligible. My desire would be to retain that and grow that by the dollars coming out of the Education Endowment Fund. And I would really hope this legislation would encourage the Scholarship Commission to come to this body with a proposal to, in addition to growing the opportunity grant, to also come to this body and ask for dollars, separate dollars for the achievement grant and separate dollars for the progress grant. We deal with very large numbers here. I mean, we're dealing with almost an $11 billion budget, and yet when we look at the small amounts of money that we actually spend on our students in helping them have access to higher education, I think that this state could afford to do better by its students, and it would not, I don't believe, break the bank for the state of Oregon to spend more money on grant programs for our students. And so I would hope that this bill would spur the Scholarship Commission to come to the legislature and go to the governor and try to get more funding, not just take existing funding and carve it up three ways. My desire would be to have more funding so that we could serve more students. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Representative Brooks. Are you aware that the governor's office is recommending that there be a blue ribbon commission to study the issues that we've been discussing?
No, I would, Madam Chair, Senator, I was not aware of that, but it, you know, definitely does need to be looked at. One of the things about the achievement grant that excited me, and I know you were having some discussion about how many students would qualify for potentially for the achievement grant, if we base it on the SIM and everyone eventually or 90% of the students eventually earn the SIM. Actually, the state of Georgia does something like that. My understanding in the state of Georgia, if you graduate from high school with a B average, you get a grant to go to college, and then of course you've got to maintain your grades once you get into college. So that would be, I think, a long-term goal that Oregon ought to shoot for, is that if our young people achieve a certain level, and the SIM might not be the right measure, and that's why in the amendments we are asking the Scholarship Commission to come up with what would be the right thing to do for the achievement grant. But I would think that would be a long-term goal for the state. We can't get there in one biennium. It's going to take several bienniums to get there. But I believe we ought to, you know, give our young people an incentive to go on to college. It's going to be necessary for the jobs that we're going to have here in the state, for our young people to get a college education and not just rely on their high school education.
If I may follow up, Madam Chair, it seems to me that it would be appropriate, given that Representative Lewis is the lead sponsor on the bill, to hear some testimony from Mr. Kistler, who is in the audience and representing the governor's office, on the proposal that has been referenced a couple of times. By me. It would also clarify my earlier question about the relationship between the governor's recommendation and the new Section 5, which called for the Scholarship Commission to study some more.
All right.
Okay. I would be Mr. Kistler.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Jerry Kistler. I'm the governor's higher education advisor. first of all, I want to thank the people who sponsored the bill and who've worked hard on this all the way through. It's clearly tuition has risen sharply in the 90s, and this is a concern that parents and students have, and so work on this issue is very important. In fact, the governor, a little over a year ago, called together a group of presidents from the independent colleges, from the public universities, and from the community colleges to begin to talk about these issues. And those discussions, I believe, helped to foster the development of this bill in the beginning and to move it forward. There, in its present form, I have a couple of concerns about it and want to recommend an alternative proposal to you for action that moves us along the same path, but just as an alternative for consideration. First of all, because the implementation doesn't kick in until 2001, you don't have to pass this legislation in this session. Delaying it would actually give some time to bring the presidents from the sectors together with the Scholarship Commission and with student representatives to discuss further what this actually ought to look like. So there's actually some merit in postponing the actual passage of the bill. Secondly, as people have already mentioned here this morning, if you pass it now, it will create a certain expectation on the part of the students. And I think in a way that could actually be kind of a cruel expectation because students might read about this in the press and then go to the Scholarship Commission and say, where do I fill out the form to get this new grant that they can't get yet? And so it might actually be better to hold off that expectation. And the third thing that has been mentioned today is that it could create a budget cliff that we don't yet fully know the financial ramifications of. So what I would urge you to do would be to appoint a Blue Ribbon Commission. That commission would be made up of some presidents from independent colleges, four-year institutions, and community colleges, representatives of the various system-wide offices as well, scholarship commission and students, and if it would be your choice, also possibly two legislators. But ask that group to think through these issues in the interim and then come forward with a proposal in the next session and it's going to be the next session that's going to act anyway. The two questions that I would recommend that you assign to this new commission is, what should be the state's policy on institutional support and student support? Right now we give the institutional support to the different segments, and then we have the scholarship commission budget as the student support. But what should our policy be in the 21st century? We're changing the way that we deal with the Oregon University system. The actions taken by the legislature seem to me to be very wise. We're moving in the right direction. Now we need to think through what the ramifications are for institutional support versus student support. The second big question is, within the student support category, how much should be need-based and how much should be merit-based? And with those questions thought about and discussed thoroughly by this commission, I think we would then be in a position to come forward with a common set of recommendations to the legislature in the next session, and then action could move forward in the manner that I think David Nestor was talking about, and do the planning first and then move ahead.
Madam Chair, if I may just follow up one question. What is your response, Mr. Kisser, to those who might say, well, you know, we already did that. We already, we've already studied, and this is the proposal. What's your response to that?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I think the question is, who's the we there? The authors of this bill have done some study and some careful thought. I think it would be a more powerful approach if representatives from all the segments came together to develop that proposal, and if the we were a broader, more collective we for the next session.
Thank you.
Well, I think that would what Mr. Kisser proposes would be a possibility that I might want to talk to him about outside the committee and discuss whether or not maybe that would be something we could do with this bill, turn into a Blue Ribbon Commission to look at this in the interim. But I do think it's important that Oregon moves forward. I've seen, as you probably already heard this morning and heard when we did State Scholarship Commission's budget, our students have a very high debt load relative to other states. And we, as a state, are ranked very low in the amount of financial assistance that we give to students going into higher ed, and even our community colleges. And I think it's really important for this state to move in the direction of more aid to students. And I do think you need to balance need grants and achievement grants. So I'd be happy to talk with Mr. Kistler some more about that.
Any other questions, Representative Wilson?
No, never mind.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Next one. Well, Gary and Dean, Ms. Randine. And Matt Swanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank many of you for sponsoring this bill from the beginning. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes. This is the first time you all have seen this bill as a committee, and I'd like to just spend a couple of minutes telling you the genesis of it, of the bill, because that is clearly one of the questions that was just raised this morning. This really started over 2 years ago at the conclusion of two governor's task forces, one on access and one on higher education and the economy. And the governor's task force on access identified many, many serious problems, and we've already discussed those in this committee around the Scholarship Commission budget and the need-based aid program that Oregon has mounted for the last 30 years. I'm not going to revisit all those issues except to point out that at the conclusion of that task force report, and as we came into the interim of the last, after the last session, the governor approached the independent college presidents and asked them for their ideas on how to address these access issues. And the upshot of that request was what you see before you today, a suite of five proposals all focused on students. The presidents, as they considered that request from the governor, started with two assumptions. Number one, that there were multiple access issues for students in Oregon, as identified by the governor's own task force. And number two, that any solution should be focused on students. The state devotes some 97% of its higher education budget to institutional support and less than 3% to student support of any kind. This is not what the average state does. And we felt it was time that the students received a higher priority than they have in the past in Oregon. The principal access issues that the presidents were concerned about were the high college costs in Oregon in all sectors that lead to under-enrollment in our four-year institutions. And by the way, the national average, states enroll 71% of their students at four-year institutions and 29% at two-year institutions. Oregon is 52% at four-year institutions and 48% at community colleges. Another of the problems that we were addressing was the college costs leading to extended time to degree, 5, 6, 7 years to get through degree programs because of the financial problems faced by many students. The extraordinary debt load that you've already heard much about during the Scholarship Commission budget hearings. And the limited number of college options in Oregon for low-income students who are really consigned to have to look at the highly subsidized, low-priced community colleges and really don't have the options that upper-income students have in the state. We're also concerned about access issues around insufficient college expectations among too many K-12 students. We saw charts during the Scholarship Commission testimony that I gave you that huge difference between the number of upper-income students who go on to college and the percentage of low-income students who go on to college. And this is something that is of concern to all of us across the country. We're also concerned about the low conversion of community college students to four-year programs. The vast number of community college students that start in community colleges with the anticipation of going for a baccalaureate degree who never get there because of a variety of legitimate distractions and also because the financing just isn't there to make it happen for them. And then finally, we were concerned about the access issue of insufficient public enthusiasm across the whole state about the value of college degrees and leading to good jobs and good careers. We considered a multitude of ideas that would keep students at the forefront of our mission, broadening and enriching their post-secondary aspirations as well as opportunities, assuring their educational choices can be based on their aspirations and not just on the price tag of the institutions, ensuring that at least the full complement of Oregon's higher education resources are financially available to all of our students, regardless of their income. Increasing their ability to persist to degree completion in a timely manner. Increasing the number of them who complete their degrees on schedule. Reducing their college debt on graduation. And finally, improving their post-graduation prospects for jobs, careers, and further education. A couple of points are important to make. We intended to avoid proposals that would pit segments of post-secondary education against one another. We sought solutions that would not displace the state's long-standing commitment to its public institutions, but would complement those commitments with an equal commitment to the needs of individual students. Secondly, what we developed is a package of five well-focused student-centered ideas, all of which assist students without regard to which institutions they attend, and all of which we believe as a package chart a new course for higher education access, quality, and choice in Oregon. As we tested these ideas, we found a great deal of harmony among our public institution counterparts, and Mr. Kistler referred to the fact that some of the presidents have met. This is the idea of a Blue Ribbon Commission. Conversation has already begun, as he said, over a year ago. These are not ideas that come as surprises or that were developed in a vacuum apart from conversations with other people. We found harmony with leaders in other sectors, with the governor, and with many people in legislative leadership in both parties, to the notion that students should be more empowered to make their own choices about higher education tracks which best suit their needs. We found great receptivity to the idea that higher education institutions, public and private, do their best work on behalf of students when they are challenged by a market-driven approach to providing services. And finally, of course, we found that students appreciated the respect for their individual needs and aspirations that is reflected in a student-initiated decision-making process on where to go to college. The proposal was started out as a suite of five initiatives, and the first one was most important, and it continues to be the highest priority in our minds, and that is to adequately fund the Oregon Need Grant. As we put this together and it started to gel last summer, we were still very hopeful that the Oregon Need Grant, the need-based aid program, would be the first thing we would tackle, and that we would get up to the national average of what other states do. That would have required a 100% increase in that budget. As you know, as you may recall, a couple of weeks ago, we got 14%. We're very pleased, very appreciative of that 14%, but we're a long ways from national mediocrity and how well we serve needy students in this state. It had been our hope, as this package moved forward, that this legislative session would tackle the need-based aid problem and at least get us up to national average. Obviously, the money was not there. It was not there in the governor's budget adequately, and certainly has not been there during this legislative session. And we're sorry about that, but I know you all are too. But that was and continues to be the first priority. We did not, however, feel that we should stop there. This was an opportunity to put forward a whole new agenda, and merit-based aid is becoming a very important factor in many states' higher education budgets, and we feel it's extremely important and appropriate in this state because we have a need to create incentives for students to do well in their K-12 education right now. Specifically, we want to promote and encourage people to really work on that STEM achievement or on education reform, or if for homeschoolers and private schoolers, for an alternative to STEM, such as the National Standardized Test. Education reform is very much on the minds of everybody in this building, and this is the way to, as Representative Backlund said earlier, to put some real teeth behind those incentives for students and parents and teachers to work on that and to achieve those levels. at full funding, the question was asked about full funding of the Achievement Grant. Even if we had $1,500 scholarships, which was what we thought would be a good place to peg this, the tuition level of the community college, renewable for 4 years. Even at full funding 6 years from now, when four cohorts of high school students are in college, this would still be less than 10% of what the state's higher education budget is coming out of this building this session. Less than 10% dedicated to students, to achievement. This does not seem to be an inappropriately large target to shoot for. To put this into statute now obviously does not mean it's going to happen, but it does set an expectation. I think Representative Roth was right. It clearly sets an expectation. We don't know whether the final achievement grant or the initial achievement grant might be $500 or $1,500 or 39 cents. But it does send expectations, and we think that's appropriate. When you are starting out on a journey, you decide where you want to get to, and then you sit down and you plan the course. Putting this in statute declares where we want to go. Then it's appropriate, and we certainly welcome the governor's invitation that there be a blue ribbon panel formed, and this can be done in conjunction with, alongside of, or inside of the bill's statutory recommendation that the Scholarship Commission brings forth a recommendation for implementation. The Scholarship Commission could appoint the Blue Ribbon Commission. The governor could appoint one in conjunction with the Scholarship Commission. Then the planning for how to implement this target would begin. But to have the to put the statute in place seems important to declare our intention of where we want to go. There's a wonderful poem that I wish I could quote right now about taking a trip to Ithaca. First, you have to decide that you want to go to Ithaca. You might spend your whole lifetime just getting there, and you might be disappointed with Ithaca when you arrive, but getting to Ithaca was the point of the journey. I think that planning for this is something we do after we decide where we want to go, and I can't imagine this legislature does not want to use financial incentives to move students and families and teachers forward in their academic pursuits and aspirations. And this is the way to do it, and many states are doing this now, and quite frankly, we're going to be behind if we don't do something here soon. Progress grant, we saw this as a pilot project. It could be relatively small, modest, incentive, $500 or something like that, to encourage community college students to think forward and to maybe make that move forward into a four-year program so that they can finish those degrees more timely. We have, our admissions people will tell you there are thousands and tens of thousands of Oregonians who have less than a baccalaureate degree, who have 2 years plus. You have seen lots of advertisements, I'm sure, for college completion programs by many four-year institutions in the state, public and private. A lot of those students, had they been able to just hang in there at the early stage, before they got established in careers and started families, they could have completed their college on schedule, and maybe a small incentive during the community college years will help many of these students think that through and move forward and get that job done earlier in their life, to their advantage and to the state's advantage. The other two pieces of the package, we understand, are not attracting as much enthusiasm, the work-study program and refunding the Volunteers of Service to Oregon program, and those are to be dropped from the bill in the amendment, and we have no objections to that. Clearly, the exciting piece of this is, number one, focusing lots of attention on the whole and our NEEDMAP program, and number two, setting a goal for this state with regard to merit-based aid that links the higher education objective to the K-12 academic pursuits that we all want our students to achieve. These are the exciting pieces, and I certainly hope you would not delay this, that we could go forward with a Blue Ribbon Commission if the governor chooses, and we welcome that, as well as with the legislative intent that we are going to make this happen in some fashion 2 years from now. Thank you.
Any questions from Andy?
I did, on the issue of the community college students, the vast majority of them not going on to college, I'd never heard that before, on to a four-year institution. I've never heard that before. Are there some statistics that indicate that kids that start out at a community college, for whatever reason, will end up moving on?
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, yes, there are, and I'd be happy to get that material for you.
Is that because a lot of the programs are two-year programs? Do you include those students that are in those programs as well? I'm just curious, because I've actually recommended to a number of people that that's how they start out, if they want to go on to a four-year college, and I've never heard before that they don't end up doing that.
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, I have recommended that to many of my friends, too. the statistics that we have a number of statistics. One that I really liked that we never did much with here was done way back in 1986 by the then Oregon Education Coordinating Commission that took a look at the class of the high school graduating class of 1976. Pulled out those students who said, I intend to get a baccalaureate degree and I'm going to start at a community college. And then came back 10 years later and said, well, how'd you do? Did you go for the baccalaureate degree? Did you start a community college? Have you not got your baccalaureate 10 years later? I don't recall the exact number, but it was huge, like 75 or 80% said no. That was my intention. I did not get there. There are a variety of reasons for that. That number is alarmingly high, and it would be less if you stopped to think about some of the reasons. But nevertheless, there's still just tons and tons of students out there who don't get to where they thought they were going. We don't know whether this would solve that problem or even make a dent in it, but we think it would be worth $1 million of buy-in just to throw some money out there and see if you can incent them to move forward. Because if you could, the benefit to them and to the state would be many, many, many times that. And then we have more recent statistics, too, and I'd be happy to walk through all that with you, Senator. Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Andy. And if I would stay the full study for a few more minutes, we can hear from the segment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Swanson. I'm a student at the University of Oregon, and I'm here representing the Oregon Student Association. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Just for the record, after involving ourselves in discussions around House Bill 2993, we found that it is acceptable with the amendments as been in on this copy that was distributed to you. With one addition, however, after consulting all sectors, we would also seek the inclusion of Section 17, subsection 2. Pretty straightforward. With, I think, one small change, the biennium would, of course, be 2001 to 2003. Basically, feeling that our first priority has and always will be fully funding the new grant program, but that this bill in its current form is acceptable.
Any questions? Thank you, Matt.
Madam Chair, Gary Andy, for the record, that's a very friendly amendment that I think all the sectors would appreciate. In fact, I believe it might have even been recommended by the Scholarship Commission staff. Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Emmer?
For the record, Tamara Beckman, representing the Oregon Community College Association. We've also reviewed the amendments, and they are acceptable to us. We appreciate the work on the Oregon Progress Grant to get to some of the questions that Representative Leonard had. We know that about 10,000 students per year transfer from, community colleges to public universities. We don't have the same statistics for the independent schools because we don't have the same matching data system that we have with the university system. The students that do transfer tend to graduate at the same rate and receive the same GPA as the students started at the university.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. And with that, we're done.
Okay.